Welcome to the show. You're welcome to call in anytime you want, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. I started in the Valley doing car radio in 1988. I was at one station 23 years, and I've been at KKNT for 12. And so I have a total of the two of those together is whatever it is, 35 years. So when we talk about cars, what we talk about is what's in your best interest, not what's in the shop's best interest. There's lots of good shops out there. You can go to marksalem.com and read about them. They're good shops that do right things. But there's some tips I can give you that will help you wade through all of the crap you're likely to entertain when you take your car into a facility that has a 995 oil change or free tire rotation or whatever, whatever. 602-508-0960 is the phone number, 602-508-0960. When we do an oil change, our job is to look your car over, and we're supposed to change the oil and the filter. We're supposed to inspect the tire wear and inspect the tire inflation and adjust appropriately. And if there's any question, there's a door sticker on the door of the driver's door of the car, and it tells us exactly what the inflation is supposed to be for the front tires and the rear tires. We should know that already. Places like Discount Tire have no problem with that, but some shops do. We're supposed to look at your car carefully and bring to your attention anything that needs maintenance now or in the future. And then we're supposed to tell you and give you an estimate for that repair and give it to you in writing. And that's where you, the customer, falls down all the time, is because you don't insist. And ladies, this is easy for you, and men, it's the same way. You just say, hey, I need an estimate. Tell me what it is. Just write on this. You got the repair order there in front of you on your computer. I'm sure there's a remarks section there. Just say, we found the following issues wrong with your car. And then you put down, front shocks are leaking. And then just put a price there. And then put OTD out the door. Just kind of tell me. Help me out with this. You ladies, it's easy. You say, well, this is what my husband's going to want. You guys say, hey, my brother, he works on cars for a living. He's in Colorado. He always tells me to send this stuff to him. Or you can say to them, I want you to be specific. Here's what's going on in our industry. First of all, we went from a 3,000-mile oil change to a 10,000-mile oil change. So we've lost two-thirds of our oil changes because your cars now should come in between 8 and 12,000 miles, and I'm using 10 as an average. So about 10,000 miles, where we used to bring you in at 3,000. Many of you never made 3,000. You'd come in at 4 or 5. Some of you come in earlier. It doesn't really make any difference. But we lost a lot of work. On top of all of that, back in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the 2000, everything had a 30,000-mile look. So all your fluids, from the front of your car to the back of your car, your cooling system, your brake fluid, your transmission fluid. If you have a four-wheel drive, your transfer case and the differential. Those all had like 30,000-mile services. But the oil that we use is significantly different. It's a synthetic. In 99 times out of 100, it's a synthetic today. And they go 100,000 miles. So what's going on is oftentimes you're told that you need to service your cooling system at 30,000 miles and your car's 3 years old. And I'm willing to bet you that that's at less than one half of the time you're supposed to according to your owner's manual. Now, they're going to say, well, that owner's manual isn't written for Arizona. I love that answer. You say, you know what? Here's my business card, and would you order me an Arizona manual for my car and let me know when it comes in and give me one of your cards so that I can call you and check? Because there is no such thing as an Arizona owner's manual, or in California, or in Nevada, or in Maine, or Texas, or Florida, or Wyoming, or Washington. There is no such thing. It's written for all cars. Now, there is some windows available. They may say 30 plus or minus 10, so it can go 20, it can go 40. But the thing of it is we know that you're not going to, my industry, we know you're not going to know your owner's manual. We know that it's still wrapped in cellophane in your glove box. We know you haven't looked at it. So whatever we tell you, you'll just go along with. But that's just not really what we should be doing. I'd say 75% of the shops in town that I'm aware of, that I know the owners, that we all play by the rules. So we look in your owner's manual before we say anything. Or we say to you, let's say you come in and you're 80,000 miles, and maybe you're a new customer, and we know that there's some fluid stops between 0 and 80,000. So we're likely to say to you, have you had any fluids changed? And you may say, no. Well, we have, we have information and we have utensils and we have testers to help us determine whether or not your fluid should be changed. For instance, coolant. We have the ability to check to see if the coolant is about 40 degrees below zero protection. If it's not, and if it's 20 degrees Fahrenheit, then that's a whole lot more water than coolant. If the protection is down 50 and 60 below zero, then that's a whole bunch more coolant than water. So we want a 50-50 mix, which gives you like 40 degrees below zero before your coolant in your cooling system turns to ice. And when it turns to ice, it breaks things because ice expands. So we have broken blocks. So you say, Mark, how many broken blocks have you seen in the last 10 years? And I'm going to say zero. But Phoenix is not exactly the area you're expected to see that. The guys in Minnesota, the guys in North Dakota, the guys in Wisconsin and Northern Illinois and the New England areas, they're going to see more than I do. But as a matter of fact, I'll tell you something that was just happened to me the other day. Up at the ranch in Basin, I turn off the exterior water system. It's in my phone, but I've done it over years. I turn it off before we start freezing because I have lots of plastic pipes and I have lots of brass valves. So I drain the whole system and I shut the system down. On my phone the other day, it said, bring your system back up because we don't have any more freezing weather from this point forward. So I go out and I fire up the seas and I look over at the wishing well and there is a plume of water that's going into the air 30 feet. It blows the roof off of the fake wishing well and I'm going, well, something's wrong. And I had neglected to shut the system down. So I never did shut the system down and I had four different connections that were cracked and broken because the ice had froze and it swelled and it wiped out the system. It's okay. It's just, I've had it in my phone, but I looked at it, but I just didn't do it. So I'm well familiar with what plastic pipe, what rubber pipe, what brass valves look like after the water inside turns to ice. We don't see that here in Arizona. I mean, we do maybe in the northern part of the, up on the rim country, but in Phoenix, we don't see that. So if you're in Phoenix, then you're not likely. But we have this equipment, and it also tells us the moisture content of your brake fluid. So there's a pass-fail mark. So if we test your brake fluid and it passes, there's no reason to change it. If we test your brake fluid and it fails because the moisture content is too high, then we need to change the brake fluid. The transmission fluid, just pull the dipstick and smell it. That's all you have to do. Just pull the dipstick and smell it. We also can take the dipstick and wipe it on a white paper towel, and we know what cherry red, good, clean transmission fluid looks like. And we also know when it has a heavy brown tint to it, which is very old transmission fluid. Those are the kinds of issues that we have. Those are the kinds of problems that we deal with. So as far as cooling system is concerned, that ringing in the background is my dog scratching his neck. So when we look at your brake fluid, we can test it with equipment to tell us what the boiling point is. And it'll tell us if it's got too much moisture in it and if it's time to change it. Your transmission fluid is visual, and if you want, you say to the technician, go get some transmission fluid you'd put in, and then I want you to pull the dipstick out and wipe it on a paper towel, and then I want you to take your finger and put it in clean fluid and dab the paper towel, and I want to look at the difference. Well, I love it when they say that because I already know that the fluid in their transmission is brown, and the fluid that's brand new is cherry red. So I'll go get the fluid, just like you said, and I'll show you exactly what it's all about. The ones that are tough are the gears, so the transfer case and the rear differential. I'm saying that most all the time there's going to be a stop service where we drain and refill the oil inside there, somewhere in the 75, 80,000 mile range. Some people go to 100, some people do it earlier. Here's the deal. It's a very expensive piece of equipment, the transfer case and the rear end on your four-wheel drive and the front end too on your four-wheel drive. Those are expensive. Those can run $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 to fix or to replace. So then the question to Mark is how often do you replace a transfer case in your shop? And I say, probably once a year. And why do you change it? Because it's been abused. They were stuck and they put it in neutral, revved the motor up, threw it in drive, blew the transfer case up, blew the differential up. Most of the time when we replace transfer case and differentials, we are replacing damage that's caused by somebody who was in the driver's seat. And that's okay. I'm just saying I haven't seen one wore out in a long time. That's the message. So all of this kind of stuff and you're a victim of people who recognize that with a 10,000 mile oil change, we got to bite at your wallet once in 10,000 miles where we used to bite at your wallet three times in 10,000 miles, if that makes sense. So there's lots of sales, and the defense is easy. Just say to them, I want you to write on the work order. I'll just go over and sit in the lobby for another minute or so. You just bring me out a new copy, and I want you to write on there what it is I need and why. And oftentimes, you won't get that because they don't want to write down anything like that at all. Those of us that play by the rules, we write that stuff down. Here is a picture of your transmission fluid. We pull the dipstick out, we touch it to a white towel or a white piece of paper. That's the fluid that's in there. Then we take a brand new can, we stick our finger in the can, we touch it right next to it and go, that's the new fluid we put in it. Pretty simple. Now, obviously, you have to trust us that we're showing you your fluid and new fluid. But then again, you got to trust somebody sometime. So just be careful. Just be careful. And here's the defense too, is ask them, you know, and you ladies, my husband and his dad are, they're car gurus, and they're going to want this in writing. So please, just write it down. I'll wait. I'll just go back into the lobby. What? How long will it take you? 5 minutes? Just gather up the people necessary and tell me everything in writing so I can hand it to my customer, my husband. Or here's my email address. Give me a written explanation on what it is I need and just add a close price to it. I'm not going to hold you to the price. I understand there's 10% tax and all that other kind of stuff there. But just, that's what I need. I need an explanation. Trust me. If the explanation kit doesn't make sense, then that you won't get one. Anyway, 602-508-0960 is the phone number. 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. Gil will answer the phone. He's a good guy. He'll say, Mark, your next caller is this, and that's how we handle it. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you're interested in calling the show and you have a car question, or you and your husband argue about something, or maybe you were told something here recently and you want to run it by me, you're welcome to do that. 602-508-0960. This is a live radio show, so it's not taped. And you'll call and we'll talk on the air. All I need is your first name. And Gil answers the phone. And he says, do you want to talk to Mark? And you say, yes. And he says, what's your first name? And then he whispers in my ear, Dave is your next caller. 602-508-0960. There's a couple of shops in town that I'm going to tell you about, and it's because I want to. It's not because I have to. Action Auto's been up at I-17 in Deer Valley for a very long time, since 1983. Tom and I have been friends for longer than that. Tom is a good guy, and he knows right from wrong. He has ASE certified master technicians. They want to help you as vehicle owners understand what they're doing and why. So there's lots and lots of, can you step out of the lobby and come with me? I want to show you your leaking shock absorber. I want to show you the other three are okay, but we do them in pairs. That kind of discussion happens. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, then Action Auto Repair is a good place. Down in the southern part, I'll get to the first phone call in just a second. In the southern part of town at 40th Street in Washington is the best transmission shop I know, Automatic Transmission Exchange. When you have Barney Rubble and Fred Flintstone running an operation when the first automatic transmissions came out, these guys have the fundamentals down. We shift transmission with fluid pressure, with engine vacuum, with speed, with load. They know all of that. So the best transmission shop in town, as far as I'm concerned, is Automatic Transmission Exchange. Been around since 1968. Phil's a good guy, and he's at 40th Street in Washington. So if you have a problem, learn how to duplicate the problem and then call and make an appointment and just say, I'd like to take someone for a ride. I can make this happen every time, and all I want to do is find out what it is. Phil said the other day when I was talking to him, he says, spark plug malfunctions are probably 25% of the transmission-related blames. He says, people think the transmission is acting up when the engine is acting up. And I said, well, how long does it take you to figure that out? And he goes, I can do it, and most of us can do it in the first 2 or 3 miles of the test drive. The customer will make an appointment, bring the car, we get in, we want to do on the passenger seat, you show us what it's doing, and then I want to drive it. And he says, this is an engine miss, it's not a transmission. That's a good thing. It's an engine miss. So it's got a plug wire, vacuum leak, EGR valve stuck open, injector that's not functioning, whatever. But it's not going to be as expensive as a transmission. Who's on the phone?
Say good morning to Bill.
Bill, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I enjoy your program. I've been listening for several years.
Thank you.
Enjoy it, but I don't work on a vehicle anymore.
Okay.
Anyway, I've got a story for you if you're interested.
Okay.
You were talking about oil and thicknesses and changing oils and so on. I lived in Alaska for 40-some years. And up there, the oil gets pretty thin, and I travel back and forth sometimes to the lower 48 in the later years as I got older and wanted to get out of there in the wintertime. I had a 96 Ford F-250 7.3 and bought it new, so I had it for many, many years. And I'd travel with this and run it in cold weather and so on. I always had a heating pad on it. You know what, the block, the heater on the oil pan.
Uh-huh.
So if I had a way to plug in, I could always keep my engine warm and the oil warm, because I think that's really important for especially diesel owners. When you start that engine, you don't want to crank and crank and crank, I don't think, because you want that oil to get into those cylinders as fast as you can, you know, and
okay.
When I traveled, I never had access to plugging my vehicle in most of the time. So I carried a bag of charcoal briquettes along with me, and a 3-pound coffee can with holes in the side of it, and some starter fluid. And when I was out remote someplace in the wintertime and needed to get that engine started, I'd start those briquettes and let the fire die down to where they glowed, and stuck it under that oil pan, and in 5 minutes that truck cranked over so fast.
Yeah. I am familiar with the time frame you're talking about. I'm familiar with all the tricks and the trades and the things you did in an effort to get it to start and run and not blow black smoke forever. I'm familiar with all that.
I think as a diesel owner, you have to take care of that engine that way too.
Well, I know, but then was then and today is now. And let me explain. Today we're putting 0-20 in diesels.
Really?
It flows. Wow. Now listen, this is. It flows like a 0 weight when it's cold, and it flows like a 20 weight when it's hot. Now there's lots of guys like you and me that are listening to this show, and we wanted the 10-30, the 10-40, the 20-50. We wanted something to flow like a 50 or 60 or 70 weight when the motor was warmed up, and we wanted it to flow like a 0 weight, a 10 weight, or a 20 weight when the motor's cold.
Sure.
Both of those are wrong today. So it's a completely different animal altogether. It is true that a 0-20 flows like a 0 weight when it's cold. That's good. But it provides all the protection. If you put your hands together like you're praying and then, you know, fan them, rub the palms of your hand together, that's the motor, okay? The motor's running. My hands are rubbing one another, and I'm pushing on my hands as hard as I can. Now, let me ask you something. Do you want peanut butter to go in there and provide lubrication, or do you want water to go in there and provide lubrication? And I'm talking about the viscosity or the thickness of the lubricant.
Yeah, you want the lightest stuff you can get, I suppose. Yeah,
absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. We want a 0 weight. That 0 weight flows like water, and it gets there fast, and it provides good protection. Now, the 20 weight flows like a 20 weight when it's hot. Again, we're still lubricating everything, and we're doing a really good job at it. We're just not building up all that sludge. So today's, and then in the old days, we did big trucks. When you ran your big truck, whether you had a Freightliner or a Cummins or whatever big truck you had, what was your oil change interval?
Oh, I didn't run any big trucks.
Okay, what did
you
ran my Ford, what you your 7-3. What did you do your 7-3? What oil change interval did you use?
Oh, probably 5,000.
Okay, now today we can run that thing at 15,000 miles with no problem whatsoever. And let me tell you, I own a 7-3. I own a 2001 Excursion with a 7.3. We just took the motor out. We just went through the motor. It has 180,000 miles on it. I bought the truck that was harmed, and I'm fixing it up for myself.
1 minute.
That 7.3 is a monster motor, as you well know. That 7.3 is going to haul my horse trailers, and it's going to haul my tractors, and it's going to haul everything I want with no problem at all. But that's
700,000 miles.
Yeah, well, I've done some work to it, but I haven't rebuilt the whole motor. I just had some oil leaks I had to deal with. So, and then I'm hoping it's not going to be blow-by, but we did do some leak down tests before we decided not to rebuild it, and we didn't find any substantial leaks. So I'm hoping. But it's just one of those things. Today is today. The thinner the oil, the better the cold start, and then 20 and a 30 on the top end. And if you need to go to a 40, like a 1040 or a 2050, that's fine. That's okay. But this new synthetics are much better than the 1040s and 1030s and 2050s. And the new synthetics is 020, a 1040, a 1050. There's just all kinds. But if it's a synthetic oil, it's three times the length of oil changes on top of a variety of other advantageous things. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Bill, you just hold still for just a second. I got to just do a little bit of work here. Auto Dynamics in Sun City is, in my opinion, the largest and most trusted source for automotive services. It's family-owned and operated since 1982. I've known Chuck Nide since 1968. Chuck knows the difference between right and wrong. Chuck knows the difference when he's faced with a technician who's telling him a story that he knows isn't true. So if you're in the Sun City area, the only place I can recommend is Automotive Dynamics, and been around since 1982. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Hey, Bill, one other thing, and I know you had something else, but let me tell you mine first. In the old days, the oil at minus 10 degrees would turn to a butter. It would turn to a solid. And at about 200 to 220 degrees, the oil would turn to a tar. And so the oxidation point is when it turns to a tar, otherwise it's ruined. And the pour point, when it pours out of the can, is the low side. So it would pour out of the can at minus 10, but not at minus 12. Today with the synthetics, we go from minus 10 to a minus 50. Minus 10 to a minus 50. And then, and this is the stupid number, and you're going to get a kick out of this. 250 was conventional oil. 250, it turned to a tar. Synthetic oil turns to a tar at 500. But your motor is long gone before 500 degrees. And so it's, and one other thing. I know personally that NASCAR is using a zero weight synthetic on their cars. And the RPMs, the speed, the heat, the load, all that stuff for 500 miles is a very severe test of oil. So synthetics are just for what today's cars need. But anyway, you had another comment, and I'm all ears.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the viscosity of oil. Now, in Arizona, you don't have to worry too much about, you know, I don't know how that's changed over the years, but you used to have number one and number two, and I know that in Alaska with 50 below, the viscosity, the gelling point at some of the fuels up there made specifically in the for the Alaska environment, mm-hmm, was like 50 or 60 below for the gel point. And I know that number two would gel at about 20 above. So
you're absolutely right. We don't really have those options available in diesel fuel today. We do know that they'll gel, but most of the time it's going to be well below a minus 30 and minus 40, because really and truly there's not too many people in the United States that are going to experience those temperatures on a regular basis. And you've cited a couple of states that certainly would, Alaska would certainly be one of them, in the Northern Plateau. But in reality, the pour point of the gasoline and of the fuel is one thing, and its ability to catch fire is one thing. But when we're talking about oil, when you have a zero weight, if you exceed the low side or if you exceed the high side, the motor's toast. But it's going to protect you well past the old old averages from before. So, yes, I understand your gel point on your fuel, but we just went from motor oil to fuel, and today's fuel, I mean, really and truly, my Dodge truck and my Fords, all my diesels, they're really clean exhaust. And with computers, we can warm that car, that motor up really fast by just leaning it out and having it develop its own heat. We can bring the RPMs up. We can, and the transmission can assign different loads to it. And this is stuff that's been happening for 10 and 15 years. So with computers, we're fixing a lot of the problems. But you remember too, passenger cars at 75, 80, 85,000 miles, we did valve jobs. Today, the average passenger car, if it's not overheated, and it's not run low on oil, the average passenger car has a 300,000-mile life. So we've made tremendous. And the truck I drive, my 2012 Dodge, has got 166,000 miles on it. And I pull horse trailers and tractors with that thing, and it hasn't even started leaking oil. Let me knock on wood. Okay.
I had 250,000 miles on my 96 F73 when I sold it.
And you know what that tells me?
But it was in excellent shape.
Yeah, well, that tells me you never overheated it. You never ran it low on oil, and you probably changed the fluids on a regular basis, because those are the three things that cause engines to fail. You overheat the heck out of it because you think, I'm only 10 miles from home and the needle's in the red and it'll be okay. You ran it low on oil well past the clatter point, where clatter turned to a rod knock or a main knock, and you ruined the motor. And you didn't change your oil on a regular basis. Today, it's just different. Accidentally, you're going to get 200,000 miles, okay?
I wonder how many diesel owners actually know that they don't have spark plugs in their vehicles.
It ignites
by compression.
you need to call Dr. Phil on that one, because I can't help you with that one. Thank you, Bill. Thank you for the conversation, and thank you for letting me relive some of those old things that were good back then, but things don't apply today. That's kind of, we've crossed over the bridge there. 602-508-0960. We have five lines open. If you have a comment or a question, or if you want to have a short discussion about a problem that you have, or somebody told you you needed this, and Mark, what's the symptoms of this? I can answer all that kind of stuff. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician, and I have been for, I think, 40 years. I've owned shops. I started in gas station in 1968, and I've owned my own shop since 1979. This isn't about my shop. It's in the valley. It's about your cars. And this is me giving back for all the blessings I've had from the Lord. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're kind of reminiscing about the old days and the old oils and the old spark plugs and all of that kind of stuff. And there has been a significant change in your car's ability to last. I remember in 1968, when I first started working at Ken's Broadway Shell in Tempe, Arizona, that we had two levels of gas. We had regular and supreme. That's it. Then all of a sudden we got this unleaded stuff. And now all of a sudden we have three pumps. And then all of a sudden we have a different nozzle, because one nozzle has a bigger nozzle than the other nozzle that has a smaller nozzle. And that's because people are putting the cheap gas in their catalytic converter cars, and the cheap gas going through a catalytic converter car wipes out the catalytic converter and some of the exhaust system. And so I remember all the way back then. I remember when we came out with synthetic oils. I remember when we came out. And here's something important. Regular gasoline, this is how the flame front goes. This is what the explosion looks like in Mark Salem's terms. Regular gasoline blows up like a balloon. Boom. That's it. One molecule ignites 10,000, and 10,000 ignite 100 million. Boom. So it's like popping a balloon. Boom. Now, unleaded, any kind of super gasoline, premium gasoline, expensive gasoline, it's how long the flash is. So in the old days, regular just popped like a balloon. Now, with some of the newer gasolines we have, one molecule ignites two ignites four ignites six. So what we call the burn is longer. So instead of just popping the balloon, it's kind of like the balloon going like that. So that's the difference between regular gasoline and super gasoline is how long the burn lasts. And keep in mind, we're measuring the burn, the explosion, in milliseconds of time. So, you know, regular may pop at 1 millisecond or 2 milliseconds, and it may, then that's the explosion, that's the push on the piston, that's the power. But on high performance gasoline, super gasoline with a higher octane on it, then we go from 2 to 4 milliseconds, we go up to 6 or 8 milliseconds. Now, frankly, with computers on your cars, the computer will handle that with no problem, both using it or not using the premium gasoline. But I've done this so many times, I don't do it anymore because it's stupid. But we would take a car, and someone would challenge us that they can tell the difference between regular and super. And so we would set up a test where we'd have three cars, and you go drive it and tell us which car, what gasoline each car has. Nobody ever made that test. We did it 3 or 4 times. Nobody, I mean, the best you're going to do is 2 out of 3. That's the best you're going to do. So I remember one guy, and he guessed you have premium in all three. And obviously that didn't work for us. We needed like one regular, one mid-grade, and one premium. And the regular and the mid-grade were kind of close together, so a lot of people would get one or the other. But when it get up to the top end, very few people could tell us that we have the high octane, the very expensive race gasoline, so to speak, back then in your car. So that's really what it was all about, is just how long the explosion was in a milliseconds of time. And so oil has increased and made a big difference. We've got oil that's on most of your cars. They're calling for 10 to 15,000 mile oil change intervals. And in most cases, I think you'll agree, that's a year's worth of time for many of you. 15,000 miles, many of you don't drive 15,000 miles a year. So ask yourself, when should I change my oil if I'm only going to do it once a year? The answer is right before the summer. That's it. Right before the summer. You live up north, right before the winter. That's it. Now, keep in mind that we're going to put your oil in your car that satisfies the requirements of the engine, and we're also going to give you the best fuel economy. We can't have peanut butter in your car because peanut butter is real thick, and it will suck the life out of your engine and suck the power out of your engine. It's kind of like stirring peanut butter, cold peanut butter, versus stirring water. That's what the oil pump feels like. That's what the water pump feels like. All that kind of stuff. So it's just, I'm creating visuals for you so that you can understand the differences between the two. But today's cars are just really modern miracles. I jokingly tell people that if your intention is to lock yourself in your garage and leave your car running so that you can go on to the next life, you might as well pack your lunch because you're going to be there a very, very long time, because today's cars, it's going to take hours and hours and hours and maybe even a half a day to take your life in a garage. Where in the old days, you were in there 15 or 20 minutes and you were got your wings and you were on your way to heaven. So the tailpipe emissions are just, and I give you those two diametrically different thoughts, and I'm drawing the pictures for you. They're slightly exaggerated, but they're really not. So in the old days, when we worked on cars, it was not uncommon for us to have a car in a gas station bay, that maybe the gas station had three bays. And somebody was working on an old car, and everybody would just walk outside and just breathe. Our eyes were burning. We could hardly breathe, but that car was just polluting the air, and his job was to make it stop doing that. Today's cars, that doesn't happen anymore. The worst case that happened is that the engine itself is consuming more fuel than it should because of the fuel pressure regulators leaking raw gas into an area it's not supposed to. So we have an additional source of fuel, so we're overfueling the engine, and that goes through the catalytic converter, and it comes out the tailpipes as rotten egg smell, sulfur. Everybody that works on cars knows what sulfur smells like, and everybody knows you got to go find the separate source of fuel that the engine is got that it didn't have before. So there's a variety of places there where we can feed the engine's fuel from two sources when really we only need one. So those are the kinds of things that we've had in our industry. But today's cars are really quite amazing. They control the timing by themselves, and they look at your foot. They look at your RPM. They look at your speed. If you're throttling up a hill, you're deep into the throttle. It knows that you're climbing a hill because the manifold vacuum sensor is telling it, and the mass airflow sensor is saying, he's running a lot of air through this motor right now. His foot's at 78%. And then the computer looks at the speedometer, and the speedometer is going 70, 69, 68, 67. So the computer goes, okay, well, even though he's 79% on the throttle, he's not making progress. Oh, look there. He just went to 100%. He just put it to the floor. Oh, now we're going to see 79, 80, 81 miles an hour. So the computer is monitoring everything that's going on in the car, and it knows how to adjust everything. So it adjusts fuel flow, timing, air to the cylinders, the amount of fuel. For instance, when you're idling your car, your fuel-injected car, this is what the injector sounds like. Tick, tick, tick. It's just a very small, fast spray of gasoline. Wide open throttle, your foot's on the floor. In the form of an example only, your injector turns into a fire hose. That's all there is to it. The computer just opens up the injector, and all the fuel flows into the engine. And I'm not being exactly correct, but I'm trying to draw wide examples for you so that you can understand. The computer's monitoring every aspect of the car, and it's monitoring it sometimes 15 to 30 to 40 times a second. So the computer's job is to see what the foot's doing. It already knows if you're climbing a hill based on the mass airflow sensor, the MAP sensor, and the engine vacuum. So it's looking at all these different sensors. It knows how fast you're on. It knows what gear you're in. So you're going up this hill, and your speed's declining. The computer's monitoring that. It sees you give it a little bit more gas. The speed is still declining. So the computer says, downshift one gear. So you go from fifth to fourth, and all of a sudden, you start seeing a rise in speed. And the computer goes, okay, that's what I wanted. Just I wanted to downshift. So the computer does that for you. And the computers today monitor so much about the car and the engine and the emissions that, again, if you lock yourself in your garage and you think you want to go to heaven, you're probably not going to make it, because the tailpipe emissions on cars today are so clean that you're likely to die of starvation before you die of carbon monoxide poisoning. And again, I'm using the extremes, okay? What kind of gas do you buy? Well, I'll tell you what I mean, my whole family, we buy the cheapest gas we can find. Every single person in my family has a Gas Buddy app on their phone. And then we also have the Upside app, which gives you discounts. So like the other day, Renee says, hey, I need to fuel my Jeep. I'm going to take it over to the Circle K. There's an 8 cents discount on unleaded. So she gets an 8 cent discount off of the pump price. So we do that a lot as a family. But we're constantly monitoring fuel prices on our phones to make sure that we can buy. Sometimes I'll buy Chandler diesel 50 cents cheaper than Payson, but today Payson's 48 cents cheaper than Chandler. So I'm up and down the mountain a lot as I move horses around and do business, and as a result of that, then I'm looking for fuels. So we shop the cheapest prices we can. Because really and truly, there's only four companies that make a gasoline: Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. Everybody else's gas is the same. They're all made to the same standards. Everybody's gasoline is the same. You cannot feel the difference between Mobil and Shell, Mobil and Phillips 66, Chevron and Phillips 66, Chevron and Shell. You can't do that. It takes sophisticated computers, and sometimes they can't, because the mixing of your fuel is so sophisticated. So it's, just shop price. No matter if you're doing diesel, no matter if you're doing gasoline, I don't care if you have a twin-turbo Corvette, I don't care if you have a blower on your old-style Camaro, if you're going to burn premium, just buy the cheapest premium you can find. It's not going to make any difference. You're not going to get a benefit by buying Shell over Phillips 66 or Chevron over Mobil. You're not going to do that. It's the same gasoline. It's all made to the minimum standards. It's the same gasoline. Now, there is a slight difference in detergent with respect to those four gasolines. Some of them have slightly more detergent than the other. Detergent is not scrubbing bubbles. Detergent is not anything that's going to keep anything clean. Detergent is our way of trying to keep the injector as clean as possible. And the injector opening and closing is about the the circumference of a human hair, or a little bit more than a human hair, maybe two human hairs. So we have this little bitty nozzle, and then we have this little pintle that closes the nozzle, and the electronic injector is opened and closed, and in the blink of an eye. And so we squirt fuel into the cylinder, and it's in a vapor form, slightly below vapor. So it's a mist, in a very fine mist. And so we spray it in. The spark plug fires, and one molecule ignites two, and two ignite four, and four ignite six. And it's a slow burn across the top of the piston, which gives you the most power. That's the difference between regular and super. Here's the difference again. Regular, there's an explosion in the piston, and it's hit one time. It's just like, that's the explosion. With super unleaded, in an exaggerated way, one molecule ignites 10, 10 ignite 20, 20 ignite 100. It's a slower burning fuel, so the push is longer. Again, in milliseconds of time. In milliseconds of time. So there's a lot of people that will suggest to you that they can tell the difference between unleaded and super, and I'll give them a Buick Riviera, or I'll give them a Toyota or a Honda, and they've got a 50-50 chance, but they can't do that 10 times in a row. And it's hard to do. It's very difficult to do. I don't know anybody I know, and I can't tell you which gas is which, or whether it's unleaded or super, unless we go into some hot rod car. And yes, it's easier to determine that if you're talking about some Corvette with twin turbos that's got 650 horses, 700 horses underneath the hood. He'll be able to tell regular from super. So will the high-performance BMWs and the high-performance Audis and the high-performance Porsches. You'll be able to tell between regular and premium, but not anybody else. So 602-508-0960 is the phone number. If you'd like to join us, you certainly can. 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. We're here every Saturday from 10 till noon talking about cars, and you're an important part of the show. So if you have any questions, or if there's a problem with you and your husband, and he believes that you should do this and you don't want to do that, or maybe your dad told you not to do this, all that kind of stuff, I'm a pretty good Judge Judy on those kinds of things. Tell me what both sides say, and I'll tell you who's closer to the truth. And we'll just go from there. 602-508-0960. If you have an email question, you can use mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at Mark Salem, Salem like the cigarette, SALEM.com. mark@marksalem.com is my email address, and I'd be happy to answer your car question. If you're going to send me an email and ask me a question, give me your phone number. I'd like to call you back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about car repair and oils and gases and what do we do, what won't we do. And I'm really good at my dad says I should do this, but my husband says I should do this. I'm really good at those kinds of questions. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Joe, you stay right there. I'm going to get to you in 30 seconds. Blackwell Automotive is at 40th and Greenway. I've known Tom for a very, very long time. Tom can do anything from oil changes to putting a wrap motor in your 69 Camaro. If you want a tunnel ram sticking through the hood, he can do that as well. Anything in between, and that includes motor homes, and I tease him a lot, but if you've got a tractor and you're close by 40th Street and Greenway, he'll probably work on your tractor as well. So Blackwell Automotive is a really good shop. I've known him for a long time. I don't make any money on your visit. I'm here just to tell you it's one of my approved shops, and they should be proud, as well as many of the other shops that are there as well. Joe, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. Yeah, I've been listening to the show. Love it. And your oil talks have got me a little excited here. I'm worried about oil dilution in my wife's 2018 Honda CR-V with the 1.5 liter turbo.
Okay.
And back when they first came out, they were, had problems with oil dilution and when the oil change comes up, there's more oil in the crankcase than there was. Is this changing the oil like every 5,000 just to make sure it didn't get diluted and I'm running good stuff in there? So what's your thoughts?
Well, Are you thinking that the dilution is a fuel dilution? We're over-fueling the motor because it's a turbo, and the oil, the gasoline is not being consumed in the cylinder, and it goes past the rings, and it ends up in the oil? Is that the dilution we're talking about? Or is it a moisture dilution where we have water in the oil?
It's the fuel, because okay. There were rumors back in that 18, 19 year that that's what they were having, and they reprogrammed the computer lessen the mixture.
Okay.
There were more problems up in the north where I usually live in cold temperatures, but I still am getting a little more oil over the full mark before my next oil change.
Okay. Now, you know how thick the full mark is, so are we talking about you're adding the thickness of one or two more lines on the dipstick? Is that the overfull?
Actually, I was measuring it, and when I first had the car, it was one quarter the full mark, because I duplicated the lines and kept checking the level, and I actually made a mark on the dipstick where the highest level was, and when I re-changed the oil, I measured it out, and there was just about one quart more oil in it, and it's actually kind of smelled like gas.
Okay. I want you to go by the dipstick, and not the mark you have. But here's what happens sometimes. Sometimes a car will take 4.3 or 4.5 quarts of oil or 4.7 quarts of oil, and the technician will get lazy and he'll put 5 in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to cause a dilution problem. It's just going to cause a high level problem. That's all it's going to cause. And it's not likely that you're going to have any problems, because if you did have problems, it would come in the form of a couple things. Number one, you'd have a check engine light. There's no two ways about it.
Nope.
And number two is you'd have some blue smoke on decel or on hard acceleration, and because
none of that.
Okay, so I think what the dilution is this: if we start spraying more fuel than the motor wants, needs, or emissions allows, then what we're going to do is we're going to start having a lot of CO, a lot of unburnt fuel coming out of the tailpipe. In the blink of an eye, the computer will see that. And it'll see it once and twice and three times and four times, and a continuing problem. It's going to set a code, and it's going to say, "Hey, we're running rich at idle. We're running rich at cruise. We're way out of whack." And so the computer knows what our CO and HC is. HC is unburned fuel, raw fuel, and CO is partially burnt fuel. So there's a mixture, a 14-to-1 mixture of oil or gas and air. 14-to-1. And when we go rich, then it goes to 13-to-1, 10-to-1, 8-to-1. That's a rich condition. So but if it runs lean, then we go from 14-to-1 to 15-to-1 to 16-to-1. So the computer's going to notice that if you don't have a check engine light, and if I can give you a variety of ways that you can create a problem and see if the computer sees it. But if the computer, if the light comes on when you turn the key to the on position, not the crank, just the on, if the light comes on and then it goes off, then the system is alive. And so in the absence of any codes and any check engine lights, I don't think you have anything to worry about. Now, I can tell you that there are cars out there in our fleet. We have 200,000 cars in our fleet. That there is a huge warning for Mark using bad words. And it says something like, "This is a 4.5 quart system, and you damn well better put in 4.5. Because they put 5 in, and then somewhere down the line we're going to have a check engine light or something stupid that's going to happen. So
an overfill isn't that bad. It's not going to damage the motor.
No, a quart isn't. Here's where overfilling hurts. Now, we have this what's it called? Egg beater. The bottom part of this oil system is kind of an egg beater. There's oil being splashed all around. It's being pumped into the engine, and then it falls back into the pan. So we have all this turbulence inside this engine. That's what we're talking about. It's a situation where it really doesn't create any problems because the pressure that creates is absorbed by the positive crankcase ventilator valve, PCV valve. So we've got the emissions control devices, and we have a variety of other things in there to control that. But unless, who drives the car predominantly, you or someone else?
No, my wife does.
Okay. And it's not likely she's Rapid Roy's the race car boy where she's drag racing people off the traffic light. Okay. Okay. Let me turn that around. Do you know anybody else who drives that car that might drive it a little bit harder than she does?
I do not, no. Even I kind of baby it, and we're looking for the mileage, and we kind of watch G's, you know, on the screen and all that stuff.
All right.
So
nobody
races it really hard.
Okay, I want you to change, though, just a little bit. This is like a horse. You're taking this horse out of the barn, and she's babying it and feeding it carrots and getting it all fat and sassy, and she's not flogging it. And if the horse wants to walk, she lets it walk, and she just does this, and you're doing pretty much the same thing. That's not really good. We need that motor to come alive sometimes. We need, when you're on the, and you're getting on the freeway and it's Sunday morning and there's nobody around you and you turn left and you're going to go north on the I-17 and there's nobody in front of you, chomp that son of a gun to the floor and follow it all the way to the bottom of the ramp. You know, those kinds of...
Yeah, it kind of helps the valves and the rings, right?
All that stuff, absolutely. If you have a horse... If you have a horse that just walks its whole life, it'll never be strong, it'll never be healthy. But if you have a motorcycle where sometimes you drive it with, like you're, get this picture in your head. You drive it like you got a hot cup of coffee between your legs. then that's one thing. That's Grandma Moses. But then you got the 18-year-old kid. He's on a hot date and he's going to drive a little different. Your car is the same way. Your car doesn't want to see a soft-footed driver 100% of the time. And this goes back 30 years. We want to see you take it up in the RPM range every once in a while. We want to see wide open throttle every once in a while. We want to see big D cells. You get to the top of the hill and you go down on the bottom side. You don't touch the gas and you're gaining speed. You're using your brakes, but we're in D cell mode. That's great for your motor.
Right.
So it's
exactly
just change a little bit.
Okay.
All right.
Well, that eases my mind here a little bit. So.
I want to tell you something. We have a twin turbo Corvette that we built, and we have a Camaro, a 2010 Camaro that we put a blower on it. These are high performance cars.
Mm.
My daughter, Andy, my son, my wife, me, my mother-in-law, everybody understands that Mark wants you every once in a while to look around at a traffic light. Nobody's around. And if you want to just put it down a little harder than normal and get up to the speed limit by the time you hit the crosswalk at this other side, then go ahead and do it. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
Gotcha.
Under those circumstances, it's like a horse. You can't walk the horse its whole life. If you don't ever trot him and don't ever run him, he's not going to be anything other than just a big old fat sack of bones. Of bones.
Well, that's what Grand Avenue sounds out here on 99th and 103rd on Friday and Saturday nights. You can hear them really getting into it. So,
and
I appreciate your time and help there, Mark.
All right, thank you very much, Joe. Thank you. Oh boy, that really is the truth. My truck has 166,000 miles on it. It's not leaking any oil. It's not burning any oil. But it sees every bit of the entire spectrum of the tachometer when I drive it. Sometimes I hold second gear out until I hit red, and then I shift to third. Sometimes I do lots of different stuff. But I'll tell you what, I haven't, knock on wood, I haven't had a motor replaced in my family. And I have three kids and a wife, and we've been married 49 years, and we haven't replaced a motor at all. And all of us are well into the 100,000 miles. My family doesn't like to buy new cars. We like to keep the old ones until we sell them to the grandkids or we pass them on to our employees or whatever. So everything the Salems own right now is north of 100,000 miles. And they all run good, and they don't leak any oil, and the air conditioning blows cold, and blah, blah, blah. But there's lots of you out there that are just like me, and I'm just like you. So 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break here in about 30 seconds, and then we're going to come back after about 3 minutes, and I'll take your calls. So there's five lines open. Gil is going to answer the phone. And again, that phone number is 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem, and this is the Mark Salem Car Show Under the Hood on KKNT 960 The Patriot in Phoenix, Arizona. And we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to go straight to the phones. And, Tom, we're going to go with Tom and then Amber and then Josh. Tom, because you've been waiting a long time. Amber, you were next. And, Josh, you just called in. So, Tom, you've got my undivided attention.
Well, I've been paying attention. Come across fairly credible.
Sometimes I'm lucky. My mom says if BS was snow, I'd be a walking blizzard.
Mark, 2015 Dodge Journey, 85,000 miles, startup. I think it's a flapper door to flap, 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 flap over by the glove box area, but then it quits, but it doesn't change when I change the vent configurations and stuff.
I think it's in your best interest to leave that alone until something stops working. I think it's a bad idea to go in there because there's an 80% chance we're going to dig back to that blend door and we're not going to find anything wrong with it and no explanation whatsoever and put it all back together only to have it happened a month later. I think you just wait till it gets worse. Now, I want to give you something that I want you to do. I want you to, the blend door, as you know, will blow air, defrost at the windshield, center vent, and floor. I want you to use all three of those settings. I don't care what temperature you're using. So when you get in the car in the morning, I want you to start at the defrost. And if you want warm air, do it. Halfway to work, I want you to go to center vent. Then on the last third to work, I want you to go to floor. I also want you, at the appropriate time, at your convenience, just pull the negative cable off off the battery for about 5 minutes and then go back and plug it in. Let's just clear out all the memory stuff. And
okay.
That's
what would the electronics have to do with the blend door?
Well, the command is from the computer, and the computer's monitoring inside temperature, outside temperature, and so it knows that you're asking for 76 degrees inside. So it's going to monitor the temperature. Mm-hmm. So if it gets to 75, it's probably going to turn on the air. And if it gets to 72, it's going to adjust the temperature appropriately by activating and opening and closing the blend door to give you hot and cold air. So
it only does it on startup for about 10 seconds, and then, you know, the blend doors work. But I'll do as you suggest and wait until it quits.
Well, my fear is that if we were on the front counter of my shop, I would beg you not. I don't want to do it now. Let's wait till we have something substantial more. Right now it sounds like that you may have a vacuum leak in the system and it's not holding vacuum. So when you start it up, it's now getting vacuum and it's going flap, 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 flap. It's going default and then it's going loaded, default and loaded. And then all of a sudden everything's fine. Well, right now it's not a big leak. It's going to cost a lot of money to track it down. Which one of the pods, which one of the activators, is it the control climate control head that sticks on the dash? Where is that leak at? And I suggest to you, you're not going to like the bill for that. So if you have to put up with a couple of flapping, you know, in first thing in the morning, as opposed to $500-$700 worth of reprogramming and a new climate control module, you're going to be happy you took my advice.
I'll take your advice.
All right. Good.
Thanks
you
so much.
Thank you, Tom. Amber, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi. I have a 2011 CTS Cadillac and the coupe, and we have about 206,800 miles on it.
Okay.
And my problem is when I get on the gas, and I do sometimes, the motor cuts out. Like, it's not, like, it revs, stops. And, like, sometimes I have to pull off out of the way of traffic because I'm usually getting on the freeway when it happens. But if I try to give it gas, like, get into the pedal, it just cuts out.
Okay, so what you're kind of breaking up a little bit, but what I heard you say is that you have a 2011 Honda Pilot with 206,000 miles, and when you throttle up hard, sometimes it falls on its face and it doesn't pull hard on it. The engine doesn't come up in RPMs, and you don't seem to be going faster. And is that a pretty close idea of?
Okay. It's a Cadillac CTS, 2011 CTS coupe, and
okay.
It does. When I have to get on it to get on the freeway or to just get on it to go faster, sometimes it cuts out. Like the motor just like it drops, and I have no. I have power. I just can't go over. I have no gas, no
okay.
throttle.
Okay. All right.
It usually makes a boom sound.
Okay. All right. We're close now. Does the check engine light ever come on?
It just came on 2 days ago. And
okay.
It's staying on. And the last couple times I got gas, when I put the gas in, the car wouldn't start. It didn't sound like the battery that clicking. It was like trying to turn over and struggling, and then it would just turn over.
Okay.
But the last three times I got gas, it did that.
Okay, now, oh boy. Okay, when you fill up the mm-hmm. fuel, are you stuffing the tank, or are you just pulling the nozzle after the first click?
I usually just yank it out after it gets...
first click? Okay,
gas
good.
Thing that comes
that's,
off.
That's what I want you to do. And so.
But my gas cap does sometimes come loose. I don't know, it doesn't really... It's like that one click thing, but it doesn't... And I thought maybe that might...
Okay. I want you to see if you can get two clicks out of it, okay? The gas cap's not going to cause you any other problem other than maybe the check engine light. The gas cap's not going to be any part of this, I give it gas, it falls on its face. The gas cap has nothing to do with that. So what needs to happen is you stop by an auto parts store and say to them, and let's put this in a synopsis form, there are times when I give it the gas and it falls on its face. It doesn't go faster. It's like it doesn't have gas, and I have a check engine light. Would you print out the information on this check engine light? So he's going to take this little handheld device. He's going to go plug it into your car. He's going to go print something, and he's going to hand it to you, and it's going to have a whole bunch of jargon in it. But at least we'll know what the computer's seeing, because by the check engine light, the computer's raising its hand and saying, Houston, we got a problem. The check engine light is yellow, which means caution. It doesn't mean stop. So it doesn't mean you have to stop what you're doing or park the car or tow it. That doesn't mean that. Yellow is yellow, just like a traffic light. And then that will be the clue, the computer saying, you know, I'm not seeing an RPM signal during this period of time. Well, your foot's on the floor and there should be an increase in RPM, but the computer's not seeing it. But the floor is saying she's giving it gas. The throttle is saying, hey, she just went from a third throttle to a half throttle. And the computer goes, oh, I didn't see it. Then the throttle position sensor is defective, and you just reprogram it. So that's kind of how it works. But there's, just so you know, Amber, there's a cost for its checkout and analysis, and then the repair, the part and the repair. So the checkout is to figure it out what's wrong. The shop should tell you, I'm 100% sure this is going to fix your problem. Then you have the part and the installation of the part. So there's three parts of that bill, and... You're going to be, the average at my shop is somewhere in the vicinity of $200 to $300 in those three things. Now, sometimes, and one, this happened the other day, it was $186 to find it and $1 to fix it. And so it's not.
Is that right?
Yeah. And in this particular case, the dashboard controls were going crazy, and sometimes it would give hot air out of the center vents, or it'd give cold air out of the top vents, and all, and it was a vacuum line problem, and we just had to find the vacuum line underneath the dash that had a split in it. So it was one of those that it took $150 to find it, and it took $1.50 to fix it. So that's don't plan on that. I'm just saying that that's the best you can hope for.
Right.
Do you have a garage that you deal with on a regular basis?
Yeah, it's far. I don't really like to bug them a whole lot. They're awfully busy.
Okay.
Only when I really break down or something, I'm calling to help me. But, yeah, I can refer one.
Okay, what part of town are you in?
The north, central, I-17 and, like, Happy Valley.
Okay. I'd probably go down to Kurtz Automotive, I-17 and Bell. Kurtz Automotive, northeast corner of I-17 and Bell. Kurtz Automotive, C-U-R-T-S. and tell him Mark Salem said you don't have a prayer in hell of fixing this car, but he thought I ought to stop by. Now, I want to tell you, Amber, I don't make a dime on your ticket. I would never take it. They don't offer it. They know better than that. I just get tremendous joy out of sending people to guys that I know that can fix their car. What Kurt's going to do is he's going to have his top dog take a ride with you, and the two of you are going to, you're going to teach him how to make it happen, and then you're done. And at that point, he's going to find out what it is. So that's a place close by that I can mm-hmm. refer to you easy. Okay.
Great. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You betcha. Josh, you hang still because I've got 45 seconds left in this segment. Then we've got about a 3-minute advertisement stuff. And then I'm going to go. You'll be my first caller, Josh. So you stay there. I have 4 open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There's 4 other lines. Josh is first, and then there can be 2, 3, 4, and 5. So if you want to join us, you can. My name is Mark Salem. I'm here every Saturday from 10 to 12 talking about car repair, newfangled ideas, and we have this kind of interchange, which is typically what really makes me happy and our consumers happy and our listeners happy and our customers happy, is just having this kind of conversation where it's question and answer, and we'll be right back. You know, when it comes to car repair shops, I can tell you the really successful ones and the guys that can fix cars have gray hair. They've been around since the 1955, 56, 57 Chevrolet. They went from points and condenser to electronic ignition, then to port fuel injection, and then throttle body injection, then port fuel injection, and then electronic timing, and then distributless cars, all that kind of stuff. Those guys are the guys that you're looking for. Harker's Auto is one of those guys. They've been around in Phoenix since 1967. They're at 38th Avenue and Indian School. And when you go there, Bob and Ellen run Harker's Automotive. And Ellen's at the front counter, and she knows more about cars than most of my friends do. So it's not a good idea to start challenging her about your car. But Bob and their nephew, Jeremy, is in the shop. And between Bob and Jeremy, they can fix everything except the crack of dawn and a broken heart. That's Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue in Indian School. Josh, thank you for holding. How is it I can help you?
Morning, Mark. Just want to get your idea about pros and cons about hybrid vehicles. I'm looking at like Hondas.
You know, the hybrid vehicles don't occupy much of the fleet in the United States, and because of that, then labor and parts is not really controlled by any market. So it doesn't, if a guy's going to work on hybrid cars, he really doesn't care, you know, he can charge whatever he wants because there's so limited places that can do it. He can charge labor and he can charge parts. And I'm not saying that everybody does that. I don't do that. I know a lot of guys that don't do that. But with the hybrid market, it's kind of like having an elephant. You know, there's only going to be one doctor in town that works on elephants, and you're going to pay his price no matter what. I think if the purpose of hybrid cars is to reduce vehicle emissions, here's my response. Many of the cars today with small four-cylinder motors and small cars that are typically the same size as the smaller hybrids, if you lock yourself in the garage, and I'm saying this with a smile on my face, you're going to die of starvation before you die of tailpipe exhaust poisoning. The air that's coming out of the tailpipe of these gasoline motors is something we've never seen before. The difference between that and a 55 Chevrolet back in 1955 is the difference between a machine gun and a jet with 4 engines and a bird flying through the air flapping his wings. It's just altogether different. The problem with the hybrids is they don't demand or command a large selection of cars. And so there's a couple of guys in town that are focusing on hybrids. One of them is really, really good with the Toyota hybrids, but he's using lots of used parts to fix them because he can't afford, and his consumers don't want to pay the new prices for those. So I don't understand why we're in this hybrid issue. I understand the transition to electric cars and hybrid cars, half gas, half electric. I understand all that. I just don't see the need because the tailpipe emissions of the cars that we have today is so clean. So I'm confused, but I work on both of them. I'll tell you that. We work on both.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All righty. Good luck to you. And Howard, you're up next. How can we help you, Howard?
Well, I'll tell you, pleasure to talk to you again, Mark Salem. A Mercury Sable 05, I don't know the antifreeze that's in there. I just bought Napa Antifreeze Gold because I've sprung a leak. I have to have it looked at now. And I threw the whole gallon in because it went above, you know, the median, you know, from cold to hot. That's the only gauge you have on the car anymore.
Okay, and
needless to say, I wanted to ask you if I could mix antifreeze. Go ahead.
Yes, you can. You can mix colors if you want. Most perfectionists would prefer that if you got blue, use blue. If you got orange, use orange. If you got yellow, use yellow. If you got red, use red. All that kind of stuff. But to be perfectly honest,
I don't know what I got.
And so if that's the case, you can either use a green or an orange.
I use the gold.
And that's fine. That's a universal. That's universal.
They said Ford or Cray. He said it's going to turn to junk. I said that doesn't make sense, but.
Well,
I'll buy it anyway.
Yeah. No, what are you going to do about the leak?
I'm going to have it looked at, fixed. It's a hose leak.
Okay. So can you see it leaking, or do you know you got a leak, but you don't know where it's coming from?
No. At the bottom of the engine. I mean, I didn't see it, but you know what I mean? It's at the bottom of the engine.
Okay, well, what happens is you take your car into the shop, and what they're going to do is they're going to take the radiator cap off, and they're going to put a device called an air pump on there, and they're going to look at your radiator cap, and it's a 12-pound cap, and they're going to pump your system up to 14 pounds. Wherever it's coming out is going to be spraying, and if it's at the bottom of the motor, they're going to lift it up, and they're going to see the freeze plug, or they're going to see the hose, or the bad connection, or the head gasket, or whatever. That's how we find those kinds of leaks. And at that point, you have a variety of choices. Do you want to fix it? Do you want to try some stop leak? You got a bunch of, and it depends on where it's at. Because if it's at a hose connection, stop leak doesn't work there. But
I think it's a hose connection because the transmission shop looked at it the other day. I put a whole new transmission in it in December, and they're the ones that made me aware of the leak.
Okay, and so it's obviously what we'd do is we'd put 15 pounds of pressure on your 12-pound system, and then we would take a screwdriver and we'd see it leaking, drip, 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 and then we'd put a turn on the clamp and see what happened, mm-hmm. Then another turn on the clamp, and then all of a sudden if we took three-quarter turns on the clamp and it stops, then we might put another half turn on there and wait for a little while, and then we'd say to you, what do you want me to do at this point? The clamp was loose. I stopped the leak. It should be fine. Or do you want me to flush it and put all the new coolant in it? Do you want me to replace the hose and the clamp? What do you want me to do? And that's what's going to happen.
I understand. And I appreciate your time and your patience with me.
No, it's okay.
He's the one who told me that it's going to turn to junk. I said, that doesn't make sense, man. I said, I'll buy the gold.
No, and you're right. The gold is a universal. It'll cover the Chevy, the Ford, the Chrysler, the Toyota, the Honda. It'll do all those. Now, Mercedes-Benz people, they want the MB coolant, but in reality, it's just like all the rest. So, you know what coolant does? Water boils at 212, right?
Right.
Okay. If you add coolant to it, a 50-50 mix, it takes the water, it turns to a vapor at 260, 270, 280. In 250, you're in big-time trouble. So what we're trying to do is keep the coolant a liquid and not turn to a vapor. And so that's why we put it under a 15-pound pressure cap, and that's why we mix it 50-50 with water. But the universal coolants are already mixed 50-50 with water, so you don't have to deal with that. You just top off your radiator cap and then bring your overflow tank to the middle between the cold and the hot, and you're done.
You know, there's no radiator cap underneath there. There's just the cap that's under pressure with the overflow.
Oh, okay.
That's where I put the coolant.
No, that's fine. You're right. That is one of the many that the way we have it. It's a hard plastic container with a cold and a hot mark. It's got a hose that goes off, and then it has a cap on the top. That's the top of the radiator, so to speak. But you're right. That's where you put it. Okay?
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Have a good one.
And to you, too. Thank you. Coolant leaks are really not tough to find, but they can be really expensive. If you've got a head gasket leaking, or if you've got an intake manifold gasket leaking, or if you've got one freeze plug leaking and all the rest look like they're rusted shut, then you're going to have some cooling. But typically, we probably replace all the freeze plugs on cars, maybe one, maybe two cars a year, and we're processing somewhere around 15 to 30 a day. So you can see it's just not that big of a deal. Most of the time when you have a coolant leak, it's a water pump, it's a hose, it's a connection, the radiator, or the heater core. And none of those have the total amount of dollars in damage associated with the motor. None at all. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're talking about cars, and the lines are wide open. If you have a car question or a car problem, it's easy. All you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960. Okay, yeah, well, I didn't see anything on my meter, and I'm going, holy mackerel, did I push the wrong button?
No, you're on.
But did I push the wrong button again? Anyway, 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open, and we're talking about cars. We've had some interesting cars, and we talked about turbocharged engines, and we talked about temperatures and what the normal temperatures are. And let me talk about temperatures, because we still have lots of older guys that were driving in the 50s and the 60s who still want their cars to run at 160, 180. Let me explain why that's just not a good idea. First of all, the science question is when does water boil? And the answer is 212. So every time you shut your engine off, and I don't care if you have a 55 Chevy or if you have a brand new Mercedes or a Porsche or a Chevy, a Ford, a Dodge, a Honda, Toyota, I don't care. Every time you shut your engine off, as the engine cools down, it condenses the air inside the engine and you get a couple of drops of water. That's what it is. Now, in the old days, we changed your oil every 3,000 miles. And when we changed your oil every 3,000 miles, it came out very similar to chocolate milk. And everybody goes, oh, you're using Pennzoil. That's bad oil. And there was 100 different reasons why it came out like chocolate milk. The problem really was something that I'm getting my headphones situated here. The problem is that back then, we had 160 and 180 degree thermostats, and what that does is it stops the circulation of water until the water gets up above 180 degrees, and then it circulates the water. The engine water's hot, it circulated through the radiator, dissipates a lot of the heat, then it's sucked back into the engine, so we have this circle. The cooling system is a circle. Well, nobody wanted their car to run half gauge or three-quarter gauge, so they take the thermostat out, which would make it run 140, 150, 160. We know now, back then, is all that was happening was when you shut your car off, there's some condensation that occurs. So the moisture in the air is turned to a liquid, and you'll get three or four drops of water in your engine oil. And that's what caused sludge, and that's what everybody said had to do with Pennzoil back then. Oh, you're using Pennzoil if you got sludge. Here's the deal. Water boils at 212. Today we know that we have to run the motor up around 220. We want to run the motor up around 220. That's normal, 220. Look at your gauge. It's normal. And it's in the normal window. So at 220, what happens is the water turns to a vapor at 212, the PCV valve, positive crankcase ventilator, the PCV valve sucks the moisture out and sends it to the pail pipe. So we don't have black thick oil anymore because we're taking the water out of it, so it's not a chocolate jello anymore because we're taking the water out of it. So the PCV valve is going to suck the moisture out of the engine, send it out the tailpipe, and now that's why we went from 3,000 miles to 15,000 miles is because we are appropriately dealing with the engine temperatures. You have all kinds of old guys that want their cars to run off of 220, and they think, oh, 220 is overheating. No, 260 is overheating. There's lots and lots of cars out there, that are going to run 220, and it's okay. It's okay. As a matter of fact, your engine's going to last longer, your oil's going to last longer, and you're going to get better fuel economy if you just drive the car somewhere between 210 and 220. I'm not saying you should make it run at 210 or 220, but if it's up there, leave it alone. Again, the red zone in your temperature gauge is 240, 260, 270, 280. So you don't want to be in the red zone. If you got in the red zone, it has to be put in a neutral, shut the air conditioning off, pull off to the side of the road, because you're just about ready to start cooking the motor. The oil itself will turn to a tar at about 300 to 500 degrees, depending on the quality of the oil and the weight of the oil that you have in your engine. So people think as long as they can continue to drive, everything's okay. Nope. If the cooling system is in distress, the next thing that happens is the oil is in distress. And then when the oil gets into distress, it turns to a tar. It no longer lubricates the internal components of the engine, and you end up with a big melted piece of engine. And it ain't never going to run again. So that only happens once a year at my shop where somebody brings it in and just cooked the motor, and it's always the same thing. Well, I was coming back up from Tucson, and she started to get hot, and I knew I had another 7-8 miles to go, and I thought I could make it. Where did you decide you, well, I was down in Gila Bend. Well, that's a lot longer than 7 to 10 miles. You drove it from Gila Bend all the way to Ahwatukee? Yeah, I did. Well, it made the last 10 miles on the tow truck. Oh, okay, okay. Those are the kinds of conversations that we typically have with the husband who's going to admit he did it. Now, oftentimes the wife will come in and she'll say, somebody overheated the motor. We know it was the husband. And she's just covering for him. But sometimes the wife will overheat the motor and it'll come in and it'll just have just a big old melted motor in it. You put water in it, and as fast as you put water in it, it comes out of the tailpipe. It's knocking like crazy. There's no fix. There's no nothing. You can put a whole new cooling system in this, but you know. And then you pull the spark plugs and you got water in the oil and the head gaskets are blown up. And after about 2 hours of checking it out to see what needs to be fixed, you come to the conclusion this 110,000 mile motor died a long, short, or a short death in a terrible overheat situation. So keep in mind that the areas you don't want to be in is anything where the needle is in the red. Yellow is okay. Red is not. If you get the needle into the red, throw it in neutral, pull off the side of the road, shut the engine off, and call your towing company. But if you think you're going to drive another 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 miles home with the needle in the red and your dashboard looks like a Christmas tree, you're not going to make it home. And some of the motors today were bidding at $20,000 and $30,000. Some of the motors today. Now, there's a four-cylinder motor that's going to be less, but when you get into the big six-cylinders and the big V8s, you're talking lots of money. And so if you've got your three-quarter ton Chevy pickup or you got a Dodge diesel, if you got the Dodge diesel, you got the Ford diesel, you got the GM 6.6, 6.7, and the 7-liter 7.3, those are going to be in the $20,000 to $30,000 range for the engine, the labor, all the hoses, the filters, the fluids, the belts, the hoses, the fuel filters, cooling system work, all that kind of stuff. Which is what you're going to do with a new motor, is you're going to put the rest of the systems, the support systems, in as good as new condition. It makes no sense to put a brand new engine that costs $10,000-$20,000 and then not change the hoses, because if the hose goes and takes the engine, then we're back to where we started. And of course, if it's an old hose, it's not the hose I sold you, and so I'm not responsible. And you can't say, well, you should have known, because fact is the matter is that no one expects us car repair guys to be able to look into the future and tell you when you're going to have a bad issue with your car. If we could look into the future, we'd be spending our days at the casino. We sure as hell wouldn't be working on cars for a living. Sometimes they say things I know I'm going to get a call on, but you know what, usually they're laughing when they call me. Anyway, the idea behind it is your owner's manual is your manual that belongs to you and your car. And when someone tells you that you need to change your coolant on an annual basis, then you just say, would you just put that on the work order for me to remind me? Then you pull your owner's manual, and when you go in the house that night before dinner, then open up your owner's manual, take a look at your owner's manual, and find out, go to the maintenance schedule, and find out your owner's manual says that you should replace the coolant every 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first. And you're sitting there with a 2-year-old car or a 3-year-old car, and you have about 50,000 miles on it. So that tells you all you need to know. Unless, of course, you listen to the guy who tells you, well, your owner's manual's not written for Arizona. And then you say to him, okay, well, I didn't know that. Would you order me an owner's manual for my car? Now, it will say Dodge on the front of it, or Ford, or Chevy, Honda, Toyota. It'll say that on the front of it. But I want an owner's manual by the manufacturer of my car. Well, would you order me one? And he's going to tell you he couldn't find one or something, because what he's representing to you that the owner's manual says isn't true. And he just got caught with his pants down. He's trying to tell you that you need to have a 30,000-mile coolant system flush, and your owner's manual says you have a 90 or 100,000-mile service on your cooling system. And it doesn't say if you live in Arizona or Alaska or Maine or California or Florida. God bless you if you live in California. But it doesn't make any difference where you live. The owner's manual is written for every place that car is sold. And so we're not going to say there's an Arizona or a Nevada or anything like that. Those are the kinds of things that you deal with. Anyway, my email address is easy. It's Mark with a K, mark@marksalem.com. And obviously my website is marksalem.com. All the frequently asked questions I have is a conglomeration of the last 35 years in radio. So every time I get a question on the radio that I don't have an FAQ answer for, then I write it down and then I make a new FAQ. So anytime that you have anything, just go to marksalem.com, click on the FAQ section, and it'll take you to the FAQs, and then you can look for engine noise, overheating, quality of oil, you know, weight of oil, all the stuff that's there. It's all kind of in alphabetical order. And it's been an ongoing project for the last, like I said, 35, 40 years. So we changed a lot, but we change it for the better, the faster, the newer cars, because they're actually a huge portion of the cars on the road today. We don't have a whole lot of 55 Chevys that are driven to town every day and go to work and back every day and go to the soccer fields every day. Those are usually the trailer queens. Those are the ones that live in the house, and they come out on Sunday afternoon when my brother comes over and he wants to drive the car that my dad gave me, and he's still mad about that. And the two of us will hop in the 55 Chevy and I'll drive it and see if I can lay rubber in second gear, and he'll do the same thing. So those are the kind, I'm not talking about those kinds of cars. I'm talking about the daily drivers, the ones you take your kids to school and you go to the grocery store and that you drive every day. And just find a shop that's going to follow your owner's manual. Find a shop that will help teach you what you need to do and find comfort in that. Because I would say that half the people out there are over-maintaining their cars. They're doing a lot of work that's not timely. And it's too early. And they do it because they think their car will love them and never fail them. And nothing could be further from the truth. And there's a lot of shops that sell that idea, that it's a good idea to over-maintain your car because then your car will never let you down. There is no science that says that that's the truth. There's no science that says if your car loves you, the upper radiator hose won't blow off. There's no science in that at all. So there's lots of good shops out there, and my list of shops is available at marksalem.com. So thank you for spending your Saturday with me. And Frank, you asked me to call you off the air. I'm going to. It's going to be on a blocked line, and I'll respect your request for anonymity, but I'll give you a call after we get done, which is in about 15, 20 seconds. The rest of you, Mark at marksalem.com. Mark at marksalem.com. That's my email address. And if you give me a phone number, I'll call you from my blocked line. I'll see you next Saturday here on KKNT.